This is 103.2 Dublin City FM, and let's see what happens if I press this button. From the studios of Dublin City FM, on FM, Fridays at 3 p.m. and anytime worldwide in podcast, it's Dublin's only garden radio show, in association with greensacks.ie, compostable bags for home and garden. This is The Sod Show.
103.2 Dublin City FM. It's a wonderful Friday afternoon in the great outdoors. Yes, I understand it may be a little bit chilly out there, but listen, I've always been told there are three ways that wood will keep you warm. One is the chopping, one is the stacking, and the other is the burning. And to that point, and to my right-hand side, the wonderful Niall O'Keefe, who has never chopped a tree in his lifetime. Niall, how are you, sir?
I'm not sure if that's entirely true, Peter, but to my memory, you're probably right, so I'll let you away with that one, yeah.
Do you own a chainsaw?
No, I don't own a chainsaw, no.
A saw?
Well, I live in an apartment, so I don't
really... A butter knife?
Yeah, I own a butter knife. Okay. I don't really have access to a pile of trees that I can actually chop.
Hey, come here and I'll ask you a quick one. Tree-wise, you've never really planted one, have you? Just to put in context.
Planted one possibly when I was a scout, but that's so far back that it's not actually in living memory. I don't remember.
When was the last time you took a walk through the woods or through a park or something along the lines of, just to put in context, curiosity?
A few weeks back, we went picking blackberries.
Where'd you go?
The County Monaghan town of Carrickmacross.
Oh, very nice.
Just outside it. Mm.
Would you have a favourite park in Dublin, in Ireland?
You would think living in the city centre, I would have a favourite park in Dublin City, and I hesitate to say St. Stephen's Green, but it is beautiful and very well kept. But
very true.
I would say St. Stephen's Green, only because I don't know very many others, sadly. And I should.
Camping ever been your bag?
Camping used to be my bag, and then I grew up and decided I preferred houses and central heating and that kind of thing.
Oh my God.
No, I did. I used to be a scout, and I used to go out in boats and camp and live at roughs and all of that. And then I grew older and started going to rock festivals and camping then, and then seeing that there were other options.
Were you one of those kids that when the neighbour down the way had raked up all of the leaves on Griffith Avenue?
I didn't live in the city when I was a kid, but
for a 6-year-old that works in every part of the country, they're all raked up into nice neat piles ready to be bagged, and you walk down the street and just boot them all over the place.
Or jump into it.
Oh yes, yeah. Indeed, hiding it, in fact.
Definitely, yeah. That was me. Where were you?
Oh, definitely, indeed, yeah. And then get into trouble, got me clipped across the ear, or, you know, held by the ear in a soft, gentle manner. I'm not too sure how nowadays.
As opposed to clipped, you were held in a soft, gentle manner.
Clipped is damn right.
Were you a scrumping kind of a kid, jumping over walls and stealing apples?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Oh, no, it was definitely anything that had to do with a tree, a leaf, or the great outdoors, so long as it was outside.
I was there, yes.
Often enough it was divilment or...
Treehouses?
I think a friend of mine, if I remember correctly, had a treehouse. But treehouses didn't really exist in 1980s Ireland.
They did for us. Well, in 1990s Ireland, when we moved to Dublin first, yeah, we built a treehouse. Didn't last very long.
But did you have a proper treehouse with a gazebo, like you know...
and windows and...
Full-blown porch and a barbecue on it
I was 10. I mean, we're going to have our ham sandwiches and crisps and Coke out on the veranda today, and then we play some football and pull girls' pigtails and that. No, we didn't have a full-blown treehouse. We had a few 2x4s that you nailed together and put up in a tree, and we got a platform. Then we might have built walls around it, and certainly didn't have any windows, and it wasn't weatherproof, but it was a bit of fun, that's all.
Now, 1980s Ireland, for me, if I remember correctly, our back garden had two apple trees that were never pruned in their life, two Bramley apple trees. For those who know how to prune a fruit tree properly, a cooker apple tree properly, it should almost come like, you might say, the cusp of your hand. Is that the cusp?
The palm.
Yeah. Well, almost like breakfast bowl shaped is the way it should be. And so they were never tall enough to be able to build a treehouse within, and obviously a little bit pointless. But what I would say is, based on that one, we just kind of sat in the tree and just stayed there for a little bit, which only worked in full foliage, but not in the off season.
Pruning Bramley apple trees, is that like akin with flowers to deadheading? Pulling back the dead bits and letting the living bits grow.
If there are gardeners listening to this who would like to explain to Niall what I'm hesitant maybe to do to an extent, at Sodshow on Twitter, and of course you can get us on www.sodshow.com. Send Niall an email and we'll have it up on next week's show for you. But to an extent, in very, very simple terms, yes, Niall, it's the removing of certain parts of the tree's anatomy.
Yeah.
So I suppose, yes, for the non-gardener, you're not
It's that it far helps me understand.
It does, yes.
I don't have green fingers. My fingers smell of honey and whatever, the squeezy thing that I wash my hands with.
I have never smelled Niall's fingers, just in case anybody's wondering.
But they're definitely not green.
Okay, to the point, and you're probably gathering, those of you at home, that this week's show is pretty much all about trees, tree planting, getting outside and planting a tree. One thing we do know is that over the last two and a half years, Ireland, the UK, mainland, has had a pretty tough go, but never mind the modern equivalent of the Dutch elm disease, the ash dieback, but none to the point, we have had a pretty tough season of it. The big reason that there were falls or declines in tree planting is a little bit down to the fact that you cannot continue to build motorways and industrial estates and housing estates for eons and eons and forever, otherwise we would live in a concrete planet. But at the, well, with some trees in it, obviously. Hmm. But at the same token, the other thing that we must bear in mind is when the ground is entirely frozen over.
It ain't happening.
It just isn't happening. And it did cause, I can tell you now for free, that season last, not season just gone, but the one before that, there were no tree planting that took place. And the landscapers and the contractors that I know in the trade, we spoke to Phil of Oyce across the way about 2 years ago again, and Philip was explaining to me, yes, there are people with orders there, there are people with contracts there in writing, they cannot get the trees out of the ground and they cannot get them back into the ground. You can't drive to the place because you've got so much frost, so you can't drive to the nurseries to collect them, you can't get back to the client's house to plant them, you can't get back to that industrial estate, that factory, that whatever the case may be, that must be softened. But there is a point where it was just nigh on impossible. In short,
I read somewhere on the internets that now is a good time of the year to plant certain types of trees right now, and I read it literally last week, but you were saying to me, "Sheik, they can't be found, the trees."
To an extent, the golden rule, or the easiest rule for those who are listening on the show, who are maybe somewhere on that line between myself and yourself, you being the, well, how would I classify you in the horticultural knowledge world?
Complete newbie.
Okay. So if you're ever wondering when tree planting season is, it's the general rule of thumb is when the leaves have fallen off the trees, as in when the plant becomes dormant or when it goes to sleep for the winter
so
period.
So about now, like where I live is covered in orange and brown leaves at the moment, and yellow and so on.
Yeah, and so we're a little bit just off at that point. Now, there are some winter trees or trees available that can be planted throughout the winter season at this moment in time, but main season really kicks in. And the whole thing, I suppose, is from a lifting a tree out of the ground perspective and replanting it into somebody else's garden, when you, for example, cross my palm with silver, mm-hmm. I need to, I suppose, give the tree the best possible chance of success.
And do you have to, when you're talking about lifting it from one garden or one bit of soil to another bit of soil in another garden, do you have to do all sorts of technical trickery to make sure, you know, is it like taking blood from one person and putting it into another where they have to match in blood types? Do they have to be similar pH levels or similar types of soil, or do you have to do all that kind of technical nonsense, or just plunk it in and hope it grows?
No, I think if you head down to somewhere like Nangle Neeson's, Matt Neeson, good friend of mine, went to college with Matt when I was 17, and you head down there and Matt runs a tree farm in Cork, and they would have most of the lifting of the tree would be done by machinery. It's very I suppose, skills to an extent. It can be done a lot simpler, but at the same token, I suppose, Niall, to an extent, yes, pH would have, I suppose, a certain role to play in some of the tree types that can be grown.
Give you an example. Like, I'm a big fan of Monty Python, and they, and I didn't know that, are a big fan of trees. There was a big bit in one of their episodes of Monty Python's TV series for something completely different. I think they decided all of a sudden, now let's look at some British trees. And they went, now, this is the larch. The larch. And they just had a picture of a larch up. And now, whenever I think of British trees, you know, not that it happens very often, but if I think of British trees, the word larch just pops into my head and won't go away. What happens when you think of Irish trees? If you're thinking of like an Irish family of trees, what one jumps out at you?
The big one that jumps out immediately to most people's heads is the, or my head at least, is the Crataegus, the hawthorn isle. It's one that is fabled.
Not a bush.
Well, it's a bush, or I'll rephrase it to you. You're asking
well, can it be both?
The newbie question. Yeah. So I can hear the horticultural fraternity screaming at the car stereo or at their iPhone, and I can also hear people I know who are non-gardeners at home saying, well, you actually
he's
have
right.
a fair point.
He's right, yes. Can it be both then?
It can be kept as a bush.
I've heard of hawthorn bushes. I didn't know the hawthorn was a tree. tree as well, and is one that would jump out at you when you're thinking Irish trees. Oh yeah, hawthorn.
Well, my own front garden, I have the hawthorn, the Cretaceous, the same plant. One is kept, it's the bush or hedge at the front of my own house, but it's also two or three trees within my garden.
Now, the first one I would think of, I would say, would be, there's a lovely old Irish oak tree. But I suppose you get oak trees anywhere, do you?
Well, there are hundreds, literally, of different types of oak tree. But in Ireland, we have about two that are, I suppose, considered or classified as native. So in that context, we have the Quercus patraea. That's P-A-T-R-A-E-A. That's the
dazzling me with your Latin here.
Yes, I understand. And it can grow to about 30 metres tall, about 25 metres wide. And that's if you leave there in the middle of a field and never touch it for
it's
the rest of your life.
Not the kind of one you'd want to put in your back garden then.
No, not at 30 metres tall. No. The Quercus robur, however, which is common oak, that can grow up to 35 metres tall and about 25 metres wide. So they are quite big. Mm. But we would know oak trees most for the fruit that they give, which is the acorn. Back to, however, the Cretaceous, the hawthorn tree. The one thing I usually do with them is, as I'm walking around now at this moment in time, you will find the red berries on them, not to be confused with the red berries that would come from the wild rose, the Rosaceae, and both of them, funnily enough, from the same family, so you can understand why the fruits would be slightly similar. But do you remember, actually, while we're on that point, do you remember people doing itchy backs on you?
No.
Yeah, you get the... I shouldn't really be... Maybe I should, but when I was in school, people used
this
to get the...
This happened to me and I forgot about it.
I don't know. Maybe you were up in your three-bedroom treehouse and I was downstairs just in my apple tree. People used to get the rose hips and put them down your jumper and then... rub them into your... That was your itchy back.
Probably, so I went to school in Swords in North County, Dublin. I'm sure that probably did happen.
It did happen indeed, yes. But so the rose hips, if you swallow them, if you try and eat them, chew them, ingest them, whatever the case may be, they do cause irritants inside, so be very, very careful.
I did see rose hips recently, and they were growing, I presume not on the same bushes, but kind of in the same or in and around bushes entangled with other bushes.
You've hit the nail on the head.
With the blackberries.
Yeah, that was when you were up in Monaghan.
In Monaghan, collecting blackberries, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think the Cretaceous monoglyna, the hawthorn berries, are edible, but I tend not to eat the pips, or it's advisable that you don't eat the pips. They actually taste like wallpaper paste. Not that I would eat that on a regular basis,
not
but
very
if you
pleasant, though.
No. But there's a point in there where I think for the, and again, it's something else that we're leading back into at this moment in time, something that I touched on about 2 weeks ago, but we're heading biodiversity. I mean, the work that the schools in Ireland and across the UK have done with the younger members of the society of saying to them, listen, it's okay to, we'll get to that in a minute, but you know, it's okay to have a flowering tree there, or a bush that's a little bit ugly, or a tree that's a little bit ugly. And the hawthorn is by no means the gardener's friend because of the spikes and the thorns that tend to come on them. But as regards what is better for the wildlife, what is better for nature, by God Almighty, the hawthorn is cheap as chips and does a wonderful job.
Well, my dad, for example, is a headmaster in a school in Swords, in a primary school, and they have a little kind of, not walled garden, but it's a garden that's kind of enclosed by the school. It's kind of a square in the middle of the school. And it's very well maintained, not just by the groundskeeper, but also by the kids themselves. So, you know, they're very well encouraged to get out there and plant, and I think that's great. But you're saying that, like, schools are getting more into biodiversity, and what do you mean when you say biodiversity?
Well, biodiversity, in short, if you were to ask me this about 10 years ago, I don't think the word really existed. But
it sounds like a buzzword that was invented by boffins in a lab that didn't really mean anything, but I presume there's more to it.
No, well, about 10 years ago, as I was saying, there is a point where I'd never even heard of that word when I was coming through college, to an extent, you know. It's obviously always existed in some dictionary somewhere, but I mean, the dictionary reference from Collins English Dictionary is biodiversity, and noun, the existence of a wide variety of plant and animal species in their natural environments.
So that's
makes
like
perfect sense.
Normal everyday life, basically.
Yeah, well, Wikipedia goes a stage further and it says biodiversity is the degree of variation of life forms within a given ecosystem, biome, or an entire planet. Biodiversity is one measure of the health of an ecosystem.
Okay, so it comes down to how diverse the ecosystem is, being as a measurement of the health of that ecosystem in the first place. So, I mean, if you've only got certain species living there and nobody else, then it's not a very biodiverse system.
You've hit the nail on the head, and it's something that the lads, when we were over in Corker Park in South Dublin County Council, they would have touched on that hugely, and it was very much down to somebody literally going around and saying, well, oh, we have some of this and we have some of this, what are the numbers, and getting some kind of a ratio of how healthy the place is. But the one thing they had said was they had one patch of land where the gates were locked and it was a walled garden, and it used to grow vegetables and things all over the, you know, historically over one or two centuries.
Yeah.
And it had since been just padlocked and left there. And they were saying the rise in numbers of how biodiverse you might say that they were just went off the radar to
left
an extent.
Padlocked and left abandoned and not tilled and not looked after and everything.
So nature just could just get on with
take
its own.
Over again,
And
when things start to rot, I suppose, though, if there was still vegetables growing there and they were just allowed to kind of drop off and rot, other things will start forming. And am I going off?
You have it really to a point.
There's a city I've seen before which is actually abandoned. It's on the east coast of Cyprus. It's called Famagusta, and it was abandoned because of it ended up in kind of the green zone in between the Turks and the Greeks, where the UN were, and it's patrolled by soldiers, but there's no people living there anymore, and it is a big city. You can look at it through binoculars from a distance, and it's overgrown. The streets are all cracked from the heat of the sun. There's trees growing where you wouldn't think they'd have grown. There's buildings that have seemed to have turned into bushes, and I'd say that's probably one of the most biodiverse places in the world, considering it's actually been abandoned for about, I think, 34 years at this stage.
34 years is a long time, but have you ever seen tarmac at them left for 34 years?
Only through the binoculars when looking at the city of Famagusta, and it's literally just streets have buckled. And
I have seen buildings taken down within, you know, 50-year periods and literally plant life just taken over. It is phenomenal.
It's amazing to think that if we actually wiped ourselves out through some World War III, plants would just take over again and everything be more or less back to the way it was thousands of years ago, possibly.
Yeah, I've got a feeling Bruce Willis will come back in some movie and save us all, Niall. Hey, listen, let's pause it for a song of the week here. What have we got in store?
Well, actually, it's a song that I can't believe you haven't featured on the show yet in the 92 or 3 shows that there's been so far.
Yeah. Let's just take a listen to this one and a little bit of reeling in the ears. Enjoy.
Yeah.
That was the wonderful Mamas and the Papas and California Dream, and I first remember hearing that song when I was 15 years of age. Girlfriend of mine at the time, and she loaned me that cassette, and I don't think she ever got it back off me. Niall, do you remember that song?
I don't remember it coming out, no. or I'd never actually had it on cassette, but no, I do remember listening to it on the radio, all right, yeah, way, way back.
Quite fitting, actually, to what we were talking about before the break, which was biodiversity. What would be your knowledge of biodiversity? Would you have something?
Well, it's quite fitting for me, too, because all the leaves are brown, where I live, anyway. I know about as much about biodiversity as I know about what that fader over there actually does, which I'm not sure. There's no label on that one. So not very much, to be honest. What I know from biodiversity is what I've learned from you in the last 10 or 15 minutes. Indeed, teach me more, oh great horticultural genius that you are.
Well, the one thing about biodiversity, Niall, that I would say is if you're looking for bits to do with the kids in the great outdoors, it's a nice one for that kind of 10, 15 minute get wrapped up, get outside, do a little bit and get back in again. Mm-hmm. When you look at the inverted commas published list of things that one can do, I mean, top of the pile is the planting of a native Irish tree. We link to the full list over on sodshow.com.
Good plan.
But within that, assuming that you're planting a new tree, it's going to take a long, long time before any bird is going to turn around and say, this is a good place for us. You know, they're not going to do it until it's a little bit taller than your house, and it's, you know, it's a little bit safer for them to do so away from the likes of where me and you can reach them. The next step, I suppose, and the nice bit, and it's something I did about 3 years ago, was I put up two bird boxes, and it's lovely. It's a lovely, lovely moment when standing in the garden with my daughter and she's pointing at the birds and the mama's coming in with the worm and the little bit of food or the few berries, especially in winter time, and dropping them into the box, and you can see the little head peeping out. But the one thing we realised was it took one or two seasons nearly for the birds to turn around and say, well, this is a little, you know, it's a safe enough place for us to, how would you say, squat in for a couple of months.
Well, we went to that, you know, that Swedish place, what's it called, IKEA, and we got one of those bird feeder things. Not a thing that they can fly into, but just a thing that you hang on the wall outside, because obviously, you know, don't have a tree to hang it in. So the birds have taken absolutely no interest in it whatsoever. It's hanging on our balcony, and it's just a kind of a load of seeds in a bag kind of thing, all kind of stuck together. We get birds flying by, but they don't stop at our balcony.
No, look, if you're, I mean, there's one thing to put out a bit of bird seed and a bit of something that will attract them in. Whether a bird will come right up to your doorstep of the apartment balcony window is another thing entirely. Yeah. However, if you do have grounds in the apartment complex or where you're living, you can obviously hang them from a tree.
Which, and the ones that, you know, the grounds of the apartment complex I live in is quite well tended. The management company is very good at that kind of thing. Whether birds stop there and whether they put out feeders or any of that kind of thing now is a different matter, but I know the plants look well.
But biodiversity is almost the opposite to well tended.
Right.
That's the big thing about biodiversity. And again, there are a couple of things that are suggested that you can do within a well tended garden. And so, for example, the planting of a native tree, putting up a bird box, installing rainwater harvesting butts, stuff like that, like watering your lawn at night time so that you decrease the amount of water that is used during the daytime. Sure. That can be evaporated from. In Ireland now, at this moment in time, we wouldn't need
Be too worried about water evaporating. No,
not at this moment in time. But in the summer times when you've got high periods of drought, yes.
Yeah.
I say drought, but you understand where I'm coming from. We would have suffered that about 4 or 5 seasons back.
when there isn't as much rain.
Yeah, but one of the big things they try and encourage is that you allow a part of your garden to grow wild. You know, let the leaves fall from the trees. You know, if you are going to rake them up, break them up into piles and leave them there.
That kind of answers my next question. I was going to say, I mean, if you are looking to have as biodiverse a garden as possible, then it's not going to be the manicured lawn kind of garden. It's not going to be the neatest looking place.
Well, again, the ideal scenario is that you take down all the buildings and you replace them all with trees. But, you know, there is a point where, you know, we've got to live here as well.
We're not
going to
go back and
me.
Become woodland men ourselves.
No. So if you have got a nice, neat garden, my suggestion to you is that you allow bits of biodiversity to influence your garden. So, and again, trickling back to it, the bird box is okay. A tree is okay. Water butts are okay. Other than that, I think the suggestion that you allow parts of your garden to grow wild, I mean, they do it extremely well in a lot of Irish and the parks in the UK as well, where you'll see just, you know, walking through the park, down the path, pushing the pram, whatever you may be doing, and all of a sudden there's one patch of grass that is just allowed grow wild. I know in Newbridge House in particular, you'll see that done extremely well, particularly around marshy land or land that may, you might say, puddle ever so slightly a little bit, and you'll find that the more native plants that should grow there will grow there, as versus what we try and plant there, which would be the manicured garden, so to speak.
Well, I spent a lot of years living in Donabate, actually, where Newbridge House is, so I've been there a number of times, just, you know, out for walks and whatever. And one of the walkways into it from the Donabate train station end of it, rather than the main entrance, is, if you, I know if you come in the back gate there and if you go straight ahead rather than turning right towards the house, you're essentially walking past a really big field, which is one giant rabbit warren, and God knows what else is living in there. And it's probably the most unkempt looking part of the whole grounds, but it's probably the most interesting.
The most necessary, yeah. I mean, there's a bit where we're turning around and we're saying, well, look, I only want to have my carrots growing, I only want to have my potatoes growing, and then before they even get into flower, or, you know, as soon as they're gone out of flower, I'm going to take them out of the place. So my attitude has always been a little bit, well, you can't just tell somebody to work for a living, you got to give them this spoon of sugar sometimes. And so there are plants like the buddleias, and, you know, allowing the wild roses to grow through the hedgerows, and not keep them like entirely trim and proper. You've got to give that spoon of castor sugar, as well as turn around and say, well, you know, thanks for doing a bit of work.
Nature can't be just told, here's your boundaries and live within that completely. You've got to give it a little bit of room to play.
Very, very true.
This time of year, you know, like say somebody like myself living in an apartment and not having the acre out the back to say, I'll put a tree here and I'll put a hedge here and I'll put some frogs over here and a scorpion here, and that's as biodiverse as my garden's going to be. Maybe not the scorpion, little dangerous, but say on my balcony, which you've seen is about four to 5 foot by 8 or 9 foot kind of rectangle, and I'm saying, right, I want a biodiverse balcony. Is that possible?
Well, there is the bit where you can, you don't necessarily have to plant a tree in your own grounds.
Well, I certainly can't do it on the balcony.
Well, the big thing for you is that I'm aware of is that you're renting.
Yes, so you couldn't make any structural changes, right?
No, really. But what the easiest thing that I have seen done in people's gardens is, yes, with the window boxes, the best case I saw of it was window boxes that were handmade, purposely built to go the peripheral of the balcony. There was a native Irish hedge put into it on one hand. I understand it's got to be kept almost bonsai dwarfed, but at the same token, it was planted and it was there and it did produce the berries. And on the inside of that, because that provided shelter, there was parsleys and thymes and what would you call it?
The whole Scarborough Fair collection.
The whole Scarborough Fair, exactly.
So basically you're saying that window boxes on the balcony are a good idea, but particularly, I suppose, if you're growing herbs and you can grow your own and use it in your cooking and so on, that's a way to go?
I think if you can get the balance between a little bit of herb, a little bit of native Irish, and again, maybe not the pre-packed, flat-packed kind of type of window box, but maybe go out and make your own, or do a course where you can make your own, or try and get somebody locally to make it from locally sourced timber. I mean, that's the real ideal scenario, to be quite honest with you.
Like something I might take up as a project, all right, yeah.
Well, I'd look forward to seeing your efforts. I have a little bit of Homer Simpson coming to mind on the DIY skills.
Spice rack, yeah. I quite like having the whole Scarborough Fair collection. But there you go.
Yeah, well, look, let's call it there, because I know we are running out of time for this week's show. We tried not to bombard Niall and some of you listening at home with too many of the botanical Latin names. We hope on today's show that we've given you enough just to maybe get you out there for the 10, 15, 20 minutes. And, you know, look, there's some of us who like to stay outside all day in the garden and all night as well, including myself. But for those of you who only just want to get outside for that little period of time, well, I don't think there's anything wrong with that as well.
No, and I do still have a two-man tent in the back of the car, so you never know.
Have you ever used it?
No.
No, okay. With thanks to our sponsors, as always, our wonderful friends, greensax.ie, compostable bags for home and garden. To you for listening at home, you'll get this, the show notes, the links, etc., and how to get in touch and give us your feedback on sodshow.com. From me, Peter Donegan.
And me, Niall O'Keefe.
Take care, have a great weekend. Enjoy.
Bye.